Today's episode was recorded before the pandemic in March on International Women's Day. To celebrate, we had a special guest, Roanne Soans, Corporate Vice President, Operating System and Intelligent Edge at Microsoft. She came to Qualcomm's campus for a fireside chat with President Cristiano Amon and Qualcomm Chief Diversity Officer Vicky Mueller-Burke. Today's episode is a condensed version of that conversation. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
I get nice. The center?
Yes.
All right.
You know how these things typically go? Like, I'll read this long bio on each of our guests, and what we'd rather do is kind of let their history and some parts of their story just kind of come through as we're speaking. So I want to start with Cristiano, because the reason we're sitting here is a conversation he and I had December timeframe, and we were talking about International Women's Day, and I said, you know, is there someone that we work with? You know, day in, day out at Qualcomm that you, and I barely finished this sentence, and he said Roanne's name. And so I got the contact information and I reached out, but I'd like to start with Cristiano. What was the reason that Roanne came to mind and you thought she was perfect for this opportunity?
There's a number of reasons I think I wanted, Roanne to be here with us. I think, first of all, I think we like her a lot and really like working with her. But and there is there's something very special about the partnership we have with Microsoft. From all the different companies that we work together, I think the chemistry between the two companies is incredible. There's so many things in common in our culture, how we work together. And especially, I think, Roanne, since she became, part of the Qualcomm relationship, I think many of the folks here that have been working with her, she has, really a true, partnership spirit. I think she makes, the two teams work together. And I think she has a completely different approach to partnerships. That's why she's so successful in the ecosystem. That I said, there's no better person to come in and talk about it.
So. Exactly. So I'm going to turn to Roanne real quick, because when I reached out to you, and you don't get to be at Roanne's level without, some decent negotiating skills. You had some terms, but the number one term, you said, I'd be happy to do it, but I'm not doing it unless Cristiano's on stage with me.
Right.
So maybe tell us about that a little bit.
I know, totally.
She's like, I'm not going up there unless he's
yeah, up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I said two things. I was like, I want Cristiano, and it can't be vapid. I don't want him to just, not have it be a real conversation.
Right.
I think I have to plus one what Cristiano said. So I came into, I was always part of the Windows world for a while, and we brought Windows and Windows Phone together, and then I, for a while, was leading the ecosystem of Windows and Windows Phone. And there was a really deep history with Cristiano, obviously, in the work that we had done on the phone side, and I kind of came in as this new person with a whole bunch of people who had an existing and established relationship, and I feel like you welcomed me with open arms, and we've only done more from a partnership perspective from that point in time. So it's been really great.
And we got both of you up here, which was a win-win-win for all of us, and a great conversation we're going to have. So let's give the audience a little bit of background, and
sure.
Maybe just a little bit about your journey and to where you are right now in Microsoft.
Yeah. So maybe I'm Canadian. I grew up in Toronto, so I saw Markham up there. I'm like, oh, go Markham, near where you have your women's groups. I went to the University of Waterloo. I have an engineering degree from there. I interned at Microsoft and essentially started full-time, and then I kind of blinked, and almost 20 years has gone by, and I bought a house, got married, had three kids, and here I am. It just kind of flew by. I still feel like I'm 20, even though I'm not, which is problem sometimes. And then I would say, career-wise, I started in office and then had, and I can talk about it later, kind of a life change that jumped me from office into Windows and getting started in the ecosystem world. And man, I just really hit my stride there. And so it went from, a small thing to leading a small team within a small thing to leading a team for Windows to then leading the team for Microsoft. And then just recently, you know, I have expanded that and now I lead all of our operating system efforts for Microsoft as well. So,
I mean, you kind of talked a little flippantly like, oh, I was an intern, now I'm a corporate vice president. those things don't happen for a lot of people. I mean, you know, but it happened for you. And so maybe you can tell us a little bit about your leadership journey, not necessarily the job, but how did you continue to rise? And what were there some defining moments in your career?
Yeah, so I will say I feel like I've always had champions. You know, really early on, I'll pick like one scenario. Really early on, about tech ed, it's like a moment where you go and you meet with your customers. And I was, gosh, I was probably an entry level, like a PM1, you know, which is where you start at Microsoft. And the president of our group happened to see me presenting to, you know, somebody, and I was talking to them about how we do our engineering and the approach that we take. And it's interesting, like you have these sort of moments in your careers where, for me, like that kind of created a connection to a really senior leader that, you know, from that point forward kind of had my back. Now, I don't think that he was the one who, you know, created the opportunity. You know, I think there's a lot of aspects of this where you work super hard. And you know, I think that flow has been kind of, has been sort of interesting for me. I will say I've always kind of approached problems not necessarily with the scope of what I am uniquely being asked to go do, but sort of taking a step back and saying, well, what does my manager, like, what is the scope and the realm with which my manager thinks about the problem sets? And if I'm answering those problems, then I'm probably having a bigger impact. And I found that to be really effective. I found myself rapidly becoming kind of the right hand to my manager. And so as you know, their careers evolve, it, you know, it helps kind of pull your career through. And so those are, you know, things that maybe in hindsight, when I look back, I wasn't as intentional maybe as I should have been.
And as Ruanne, as you've been telling us your story, was there anything that stood out for you and in Microsoft as you were going through? Were you the only woman in the room, surrounded by men, or was there a good kind of diverse set of of mentors? Or tell us a little bit about your experiences.
Love to say yes. The reality is, for the most part, it was no. I had one woman in my leadership chain, Julie Larson Green, but for the most part, no. It was just a sea of men, and so hopefully, you know, I think that's changing. I guess the thing for me is this is kind of a little bit strange, especially because, you know, now that I am in a more influential position, I actually have a lot more accountability for changing it. And I have been successful within the system. Mm-hmm. I have not actually been successful changing the system. And so, you know, I have just been one of the guys. Oh, we're playing fantasy football. Great. I'm going to learn fantasy football. You know, we're going out drinking. Okay, great. I'm going to show up and I'm going to go out drinking. I mean, I have definitely some, I've been like pregnant in Asia while everybody's sitting around smoking cigars, you know. I've brought a newborn to work afterwards and been like, okay, well, I've breastfed in a meeting. That was a complicated. I guess like I've never felt like a woman sort of in work, and I've never really looked at things necessarily that way. And you know, if that's the world right now, and the world right now is these are the sort of activities that you kind of have to do, well then I'm just going to adapt and I will do those activities. And that's maybe not okay if I close my eyes and I think about, well, what kind of world do I want, right, 20 years from now? Because there's a lot of people who have amazing ideas who are not willing to adapt in that way. And that is totally fine and totally acceptable. But man, it's such a shame that they have oodles of potential, and it's just not necessarily getting, you know, exposed or pulled through because, you know, that level of adaptation isn't something that, you know, they've either been invited to or felt comfortable mm-hmm. with, you know, or chosen to do.
What are some of the things that you're like thinking about on a daily basis to maybe make sure that that member of your team who's got brilliant ideas but does not want to learn how to play fantasy football, how does Microsoft make sure those ideas get to the table?
Yeah, there's a few things that I see are kind of more individual, and then there's some things that I think are more kind of at a systems level. And I ultimately think you have to get it to be a systems level in order to truly make the change. So at a systems level, I've been pushing really hard to take the same way we develop products, which everybody understands and everybody prioritizes and everybody follows. What does it take to take that same development philosophy and actually apply it to DI and culture? Because in a lot of cases, it's sort of the side thing that you do, and there isn't the same level of intensity. Well, if you have OKRs, or if you have milestones, or if you have checkpoints, and usually those go all the way up to the senior leaders within the team, you know, why don't you have all of those same processes for what you're doing around the objectives that you have for culture and diversity? So I have been pushing really hard to bring the processes that we run to be more on an equal level. I've been pushing really hard on meeting culture. I think in a lot of cases, you know, it is actually the meetings, and whether you are stopping to listen, you're pausing to make sure that other voices can be heard, you're actually involving people who are on the phone, because now most of the meeting right. interactions you have a, you know, people from lots of different geographies and locations dialing in. So that's been a place. And then I've also found, like, as I've progressed in my career, fewer and fewer people talk to me, which is odd because I've been the person on the teams that typically yeah. have been talked to. And that's been a struggle for me. And so I do listening lunches. I probably hit close to about 10% of the organization. It's just random populations. And we get together for lunch and we just talk. And I have early in careers to senior people, I'll do all women, I'll do all men, I'll cut across disciplines.
Yeah, great. Christiana, how do you think about this as a leader now in your role, and what is your responsibility?
Look, I have this belief, which, and I think it has been true for all of the successful, you know, companies, all the successful projects. I'm sure it's true at Qualcomm. I'm sure it's true at Microsoft, that at the end of the day, you know, especially in the technology sector, companies will succeed when they actually get the smartest people on the world, you know, working for them and working together. And you need to be able to attract that kind of talent. So I was listening to Rowan talking about, you know, people that have very good ideas, and then it reminds me of the presentation I saw at CS that kind of resonate with me. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was somebody from Walmart that was talking.
Yeah, I think it was Chief Diversity Officer.
I think so.
And they're pretty smart.
And he was talking, very good.
That's good.
And they were talking about, you know, the data that you see about, you know, the diverse teams, you know, perform better. But it's also true that very homogeneous teams perform better as well. They're both true. So what he said that resonate with me is the most important thing is to address inclusion, because then automatically you address diversity. Because people feel included, then you will have a diverse team.
Yeah. And Rowan, in our prep, you had talked very similarly about Microsoft's view of making sure that you've got the best products and you don't miss something.
Yep.
And this whole idea of inclusion and making sure that if somebody has an idea, or they know about a problem,
yep.
you really need to make sure that they feel comfortable
yep.
Speaking up. So can you add on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it is amazing how much to truly change culture it helps to have a message from the top. I think Satya has, right from the get-go, been crystal clear that culture is one of his absolute number one priorities. you know, we've instigated a few things that I think have been really helpful. We talk about these leadership principles that we have, which is you create clarity, you generate energy, you create clarity, you deliver success. And this is like one of the first times ever in my career that I felt like I've had a central driven process that actually I really believe in. McKinsey does a really great Women in the Workplace report every year, and they published it in the fall. And one of the things they talk about is the concept of the onlys, where you are the only person in the room. And it turns out that's a really alienating place to be. It doesn't matter whether you're the only female or you're the only person from Latin America in the room. Like it doesn't, there's lots of people who feel like they are, who feel and are an only. And so we've tried to be very intentional about taking pockets of people and putting them in groups so that they can actually foster each other's development and that there's a community there to rely on. I found that to be really important for early in career, which is also important because our pipeline is about 50% diverse, which is very different than the overall demographic that we have within the established workforce. And so you want to be able to foster the, you know, and fuel the growth of that group. And so there's some specific things. There's lots of things we tried and failed at too. But
yeah, it's. I always say if it was easy, we would all be, you know, have figured it out a long time ago, right? Yeah. I mean, smart companies, smart people in leadership. It's not an easy topic, and it's one that we have to just, you know, continue to try to keep turning and looking at from a lot of different angles. So as we think about, you know, I know both of you have kids. They're going to be, you know, in your roles, you know, 20, 25 years from now, what things do you kind of, I guess, is there a way for us to continue to change our companies and make sure that they are more inclusive and all members, even from entry levels to the senior leadership, are really presenting those as great places to work, very successful companies, execution focused because of some of these fundamentals?
I have had those conversations with some of my friends. If you just look at our kids, I think, you know, I look at my kids and how they talk and how they think, and I think some of my kids, they're probably right, you know, after the millennials, they're just the next one. But they're more inclusive than we are. They have a more open-minded. So, and I think we're going to the right direction. You have to take, you know, there's important steps you need to take, but, you know, it's things are going into the right direction, and I think we're going to continue to see improvement over time. And like I said, that's a good thing about being optimistic about things.
Great.
Yeah, I would add, you know, I hope it's not about the boys' club or the girls' club. I hope it's just about, you know, great people doing great work, and that, you know, that's just not a factor that anybody necessarily even looks at when they think about the work we do. In terms of specifics and things that we could do, I will, you know, it's interesting. Melinda Gates actually gave the Grace Hopper presentation, I think it was like 2017. It was the first Grace Hopper that I'd actually been to, and she rocked it. She did a really good job, and I'm sure it's posted somewhere. I would recommend that as something that everybody goes and listens to. She talked about pathways and the fact that we need to get a little bit more creative in terms of how we think about the types of people that we welcome in and the types of people that we bring into roles, and that in a lot of cases, you just have these really structured, oh, we recruit from these three schools, and you know, you go straight to like the network of the people that you maybe went to school with, et cetera. And that just exacerbates this really narrow funnel. Mm-hmm. And so she talked about pathways and the importance of, you know, gosh, like a woman in tech who leaves to go raise a family and now wants to enter back into the workforce, incredibly, incredibly hard.
Right.
You know, when you hear these horror stories of, oh, well, what did you learn? Like, what did you do in your last job? And I'm like, okay, you've just been off for 8 years raising your children.
Right.
I guess the oddest question ever to actually pose to somebody. And the reality is you can learn so many more things about sort of balance and empathy and openness potentially in the role of raising your family than sometimes you can in the office.
Right.
So I think we need to hire more based off of somebody's ability to demonstrate how they think than necessarily a set of bullets on their resume or, you know, where they went to school. The other one I would push on, and I am starting to see real change here, is around transparency. You know, again, like if nobody serves up the problem, then it's like out of sight, out of mind. And only 3% of Fortune 500 companies actually share the demographics and how they're doing with their workforce. Qualcomm is within that 3%, so thank you for that. Microsoft is within that 3%, but that 97% is a really big number. And I think you have to make it a priority, and you have to give people targets, and they have to be held accountable, and they have to feel the pain of if they don't meet that target, or again, just like products, like if you delivered a really bad product that didn't have any sort of business success, you will not be in that job for a very long period of time.
Right.
Why do we have a different bar for something that there is data that shows the most diverse and inclusive teams perform the best? So why would we have a different bar for, you know, somebody who's does not have a diverse team?
Right.
And they get to stay in that state for a really long period of time.
And you know they're not as optimized as they could be, and that should be a business imperative.
It should, and there should be accountability. There should be accountability for change.
Yeah, yeah. Anything to add there?
Yeah, actually, the thing about interview and how we think about, you know, attracting people that will help companies be successful, you know, it's you know, there's an experience I want to share, and I think some of the folks that I saw in the audience that probably know about this will relate to. About a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed a candidate, and it was a successful interview, and I think we're hoping to hire. I don't know if we hire or not, so I don't know about that. But the interview was very interesting. The interview started, and the candidate just, you know, told me, I started the question, said, you know, you talk to some other people, do you know what the job is? And the candidate told me, yes, I know what the job is, and let me tell you, you know, if I have this job, what do I believe I need to do and how I'll make this job successful and what success means to me? And he went through the whole interview telling me what he would do if he had the job. When the interview ended, we were running out of time, and it was a very successful interview, and he asked me, do you want me to tell him about my past experience? I said, no, don't have to. Because at least for me, good, bad, or indifferent, it was very clear that this candidate knew exactly what we needed to do to do that job. And I think it relates to some of the things that you said. Maybe some of the things that were true in the past, they're not going to be true going forward. And especially if we want, you know, to be in an environment that we actually attract to our respective organizations, you know, the best people in the world, and they're going to have, you know, different backgrounds. Maybe they're not all came from the same university. Maybe they all came out of the same industry. Maybe they all didn't work at the same company. But, you know, as long as we have the mechanism to allow, you know, our respective organizations to understand the potential of those candidates, I think we're going to get, you know, the best people, respective companies, and for everybody to work together. So I think that whole conversation about how to think about the pipeline of candidates and interview is a very important one. It's one that we can actually inflict change and see the results.
Yeah, I always say, I think the three of us are all examples. We all went to college, we all studied, you know, our particular degrees, and what we're doing now, we had to have the ability to learn, mm-hmm. right? So no matter what you come to the, you know, front door of the company with, it's going to change. Like there's no chance you would have known that you needed to be this expert on 5G technology, and yet now, you know, you're eloquent, you know exactly what that technology is, so it's also this ability to just continue to learn.
Yep.
And surround yourself with people, but you are also evolving and trying to find candidates where you can actually measure that. It's difficult, but really key point.
Yeah, now that I'm, you know, it's interesting, now that I'm, you know, doing, you know, I've been at Qualcomm for 25 years, and it's interesting, when I just got off college and I went to graduation, you know, and I don't know if some other young engineers go through this, but I thought you know, I knew everything. I realized today I knew nothing. So, and I think, you know, how you go to your career, which is, you know, it's a huge, you know, learning experience. And I think to that point, it's never late. It's never, never late for people to start anything, to learn something new, to, you know, to go, you know, pursue, you know, your goals, your dreams.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. So we had an audience question that I thought I would just tee up here for either one of you, or perhaps maybe both. So the question is, women typically feel uncomfortable putting themselves in the spotlight. How can women get credit for their work and rise above the noise when they feel uncomfortable championing themselves?
Well, that's a funny, well, it's not funny. You know, it's interesting. The number, I don't know how much you see this, but you know, if I think about people who come in and want to have like career conversations, I'm like, the number of men who come in and are like, I deserve this. And like, where is my next promotion? And where am I at with these things? And I'm like they're very, very transparent and very clear on what they want. And the number of women I have coming and doing that same thing is very quiet. And so it is interesting to just sort of say, you know, the reality is like you do get compared, like you do get compared to your peer group and the things that are around you. And part of me wants to push a little bit on, like, be confident and know that other people are having those conversations. It's totally appropriate and fine for you to be having those conversations too, even if it means, you know, you got sweaty palms,
right?
And you're really uncomfortable and you have like butterflies in your stomach and, you know, it doesn't necessarily feel that great. The other thing that I think we're getting better at is I think sometimes, you know, women don't necessarily put up their hand as fast. And, you know, I look at the focus even for like big events that we've had, speakers to come and talk about work that we've been doing. And there's been a really intentional push to have more diversity and inclusion in the people who are actually on stage representing the work. And that I think has been nice to see. Sometimes that pushes might push somebody outside of their comfort zone. But again, like I think you have to stretch yourself and you have to have a little bit of that tension and pressure. And I think that will ultimately be helpful for learning and building new skills that you wouldn't maybe necessarily have set out of the gate that you were comfortable with.
So let me just circle back to something you had said, because you got three actually young kids right now.
Yep.
When it comes time to raise your hand or take that next role, how much goes through your mind of, can I do this next thing and still, you know, be a good mom and, you know, get kids to soccer? And because that is, I think, an added complexity to women in the workforce that do actually have other responsibilities.
Yeah. So my kids are 3, 5, and 7. They're all girls. My poor husband. He grew up as one of three boys, and I'm like, this is like karma coming right back at you. It's hard. There's just like no easy answer to this. I feel like, you know, you have kind of maybe four legs to the stool, which is like there's Roanne at work, there's Roanne kind of as a mom, you know, there's Roanne as a wife, and then there's Roanne for herself. Mm-hmm. And I think ideally you try to have all of those things in balance. I think that for the most part, I at least at this phase for where I'm at, you know, Roanne for herself is mostly at zero. Yeah, that part's not as great as I would like it to be. And then I feel like I try really hard to balance across the other three, but I don't have great answers on this. I am very fortunate. You know, my husband is 50% mom, and not everybody has that, but like he cooks better than I cook, and he can put all the kids to sleep, and you know, I can disappear to travel for a week and be like, I'll see you later. And he's on it, you know, and we did that. I took my new 13-week maternities and then left him first with one 3-month-old, and then I left him with a 2-year-old and a 3-month-old, and then I left him with a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 3-month-old. And so that's very helpful for me. And we have clear boundaries and guidelines. Like, we break the weeks up and we know who's on and we know who's not on. And then part of me just kind of says it's just a phase. I don't get as much sleep as I would like to get. You know, like, I'm fairly hardcore, and the times when I'm on. And so I don't have my laptop or my phone, and I'm like with my kids, and I put them to bed, and then I start my second job from, 10 to whatever time. And so those aren't great answers, but it's the reality of what it takes for this phase of where I'm at.
And it didn't stop you from saying yes to the opportunities?
No, I'm horrible at saying no. I say yes to way too many things. Like, at work, like with my kids, I am completely oversubscribed. And yeah, that is a absolute problem.
Well, and I think it's also a fallacy that dads don't do any of those other things as well. I mean, Cristiano, how do you balance?
Yeah. So,
are you 50% mom? Yeah.
One of the biggest issues for me, I have to, there's so many, I spend way more, hours with the people at work than I spend with my own family. That's why, I like the people I work with a lot, because that's really, end up being, where you spend most of your life with. And then I try, when I get home, and it's difficult, but when I get home, if I'm with my wife and my kids, that's where I am with. I'm there. Yeah. I am there. When I'm there, I'm there. You have to find that balance. I think, everyone is busy. Even the kids right now are busier than, they used to be. And I think you have to find a way that, everybody feels, they're part of it, and everybody, is committed to it, and help the way I can. And on the specifics, I am not a very good cook, but my biggest creation of seafood pasta was instant noodle with sardines.
I'm crackers and cheese. Yeah. So, we should get together. It'll be a really healthy meal.
But, I kind of relate to. But the one thing I want to say, though, with everything you have going on, and you just described it, you're a very happy person. And I think that's what's the most important thing. If you're happy, how you live in your life, and you have that positive attitude in life, everything works. You find a way to get, things in place, and it just go on. And that's how I think about it.
Great. Well, I'm going to wrap up. I think, we heard really two similar yet different leadership stories. We heard an important partnership for the business. We heard take control of your own career. Figure out how to ask the questions, and try to do it with a smile on your face and surround yourself with really good people who are going to challenge you. I think those are some of the takeaways. So maybe you all can kind of think about what you're going to take away. So an equal world is an enabled world. Individually, we're all responsible for our own thoughts and actions all day, every day. We can actively choose to challenge stereotypes, fight bias, broaden perceptions, improve situations, and celebrate women's achievements. So collectively, each one of us can create a gender equal world. So each for equal means it's all of our responsibility to go out and try to get something that you're touching today and make it better. So thank you all for coming, and thanks to Roanne.
Thank you for doing this and for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Qualcomm podcast. If you haven't already subscribed, you can do so via SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts. And by the way, our friends at Legal really want you to know that references to Qualcomm may be Qualcomm Incorporated, Qualcomm Technologies, Inc., and or its subsidiaries. Qualcomm Snapdragon is a product of Qualcomm Technologies, Incorporated. Until next time.